The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And we are here. Whoops, it would help if I had audio. Hold on, for some reason. Why is there no audio on this track? That makes no sense. It looks like there's audio. Let me try one other thing. Okay. Hello? No. I'm still seeing no audio. Okay, this is weird. I don't know what I need to do. I'm going to try it with something else. I know you can't hear me. Hold on. Let me try to, if I do away with this one, 1, 2, 3, 4, I still have no audio. I do have audio going out to the radio listeners, but no audio on the video. So that would mean, let me try one other thing. I have no idea what I could have done. I'm going to try one more thing and see if this adds audio. Does it? 1, 2, 3, 4. It does not. We might not have no audio. I know. Isn't that weird? Let me try. What if I come in from here? I'm blown away. Okay. It's looking like there's no audio anywhere. How did I do this? I somehow muted the audio on the audio stream. Audio properties. Why are there no audio showing up on anything? This is weird. Check the volume. I know that's not the issue. It's not a volume issue. I'll tell you what. Well, I figured this out because this is not good. Take this away. How's this for? Why do we got nothing here? Nothing there. Nothing there. All right. I am going to stop this video. I mean, we still have audio. I'll tell you what, for those of you listening, I'm going to play What's News. So for the audio listeners and for the video people, I'm going to try to figure out what's wrong. So in the best interest of, you know, what we do here regularly, and I have a stream coming up there. Oh, my goodness. All right, here we go. Here's What's News.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The UN Secretary General says the world is facing a generational catastrophe because of the havoc COVID-19 is wreaking on education systems. As it stands, more than a billion students have been affected by the pandemic, and that could mean long-term consequences for other critical issues like child marriage and gender equality. UN agencies are working with education partners on ways to prioritize school openings once local coronavirus outbreaks subside, including targeting education in relief funding and exploring new teaching methods. Here in the U.S., new studies suggest frequent testing will be the key to keeping classrooms and college campuses safe. In the UK, the British government says it's secured millions of rapid coronavirus tests that can detect the virus in about 90 minutes. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, appears on my show, The Nicole Sandler Show, Tuesday afternoon at 5 Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network to talk about what's at stake and the best way to move forward. Trump, meanwhile, continues to gaslight the nation by telling us things are going really well in the fight to contain the coronavirus. Axios' Jonathan Swan attempted to correct him and try to get him to actually consider real facts.
Numerous categories were lower than the world.
Lower than the world?
Lower than what is that? Europe.
In what? In what?
Take a look. Here's case death.
Oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population. That's where the U.S. is really bad.
Well,
much worse than South Korea, Germany, etc.
You can't do that. You have
Why
to go,
can't I do that?
You have to go by You have to go by where, look, here is the United States. You have to go by the cases. The cases.
Why not as a proportion of population?
When you have somebody, what it says is when you have somebody that has, it, where there's a case, the people that live from those cases.
It's surely a relevant statistic to say if the U.S. has X population and X percentage of death of that population versus South Korea.
No, you have to go by the cases.
Well, look at South Korea, for example. 51 million population, 300 deaths. It's like, it's crazy.
You don't know that.
I do. It's
you
on the,
don't know
it's,
that.
You think they're faking their statistics? South Korea?
An advanced country? I won't get into that because I have a very good relationship with the country. But you don't know that.
Remind you of anything?
You most certainly did not.
Now, let's get one thing quite clear. I most definitely told you.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, this is an argument.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's just contradiction.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
It is not.
Manhattan District Attorney Cy Vance's office suggested in a court filing Monday that they're investigating the president and his company, the Trump Organization, for possible bank and insurance fraud. The filing was made in response to a lawsuit by Trump's attorneys who have argued that prosecutors were acting in bad faith by issuing what they described as a, quote, wildly overbroad subpoena, seeking Trump's personal and corporate tax returns from Trump's accountants. In the filing, prosecutors argued the subpoena wasn't too broad, since that notion is based on the false premise that the inquiry is limited to hush money payments made by the president's former personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, in 2016. The documents mention, quote, public reports of possibly extensive and protracted criminal conduct at the Trump Organization. The office was already investigating hush money payments Trump's legal team made to two women who claimed to have had affairs with the man. This comes as Deutsche Bank investigates the longtime banker of Donald Trump and Jared Kushner in a Manhattan condo deal. In more executive overreach, Donald Trump on Monday said that he had the power to block mail-in voting, although he stopped short of saying he'd actually do it. He said, I have the right to do it. We haven't got there yet, but we'll see what happens. Yeah, right. But it's not only Nevada. More states are making it easier for their citizens to participate in mail-in voting ahead of November's election. Nevada was the eighth state, along with District of Columbia, to adopt universal vote-by-mail for the presidential election. Minnesota has agreed to drop a provision from its mail-in voting process that required voters to get a notary or witness to sign their ballot envelope. Meanwhile, the Postal Service says they're ready to handle the demands of increased ballots after Trump, who's already repeatedly criticized mail-in voting, questioned its ability to do so. And now we turn to the census, where the Census Bureau confirmed on Monday that it will end its counting efforts for the 2020 census a month early, on September 30th instead of October 31st. This affects everything from door-to-door to online, phone, and mail collection of census forms. About four households out of every 10 nationwide still have yet to be counted. Democrats in Congress have expressed concern that the White House is pushing for stopping the count early to benefit Republicans when House seats are reapportioned and voting districts are rejoined. Remember, the census only happens once every 10 years, and the results affect how much funding and representation places get. The director of the Census Bureau says there's still time enough to get a complete and accurate count. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button. All right, so we made it through a few technical problems, and it looks like I'm not on Facebook, but we're streaming on Periscope and, of course, Progressive Voices Network and everywhere else. And I'm excited to welcome to the program Randy Weingarten. Randy is the president of the American Federation of Teachers. Randy, you there? Can you hear me? Randy, your mic.
Sure.
There you are. I can hear you now.
I muted myself.
I see you and hold
on. I was telling you on Twist, just direct messaging you that I am here.
I see you. And thank you so much for jumping on with us. I know it's crazy times right now, and I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk with us. First of all, how are you doing? How are you holding up through all this madness that we're living through?
Thankfully, I and my wife, we just had a COVID test last Friday. And so I'd never been so happy to see, you know, something that says negative. So thankfully we are okay. I was with a lot of people last week because we did our convention. So I've insisted that everybody that I was with on my staff gets tested because their safety comes first, even though we all wore masks and we all were 6 feet physically distant. But I am really worried about our country because we haven't beat the virus. In fact, we reopened too quickly. And now it's a terribly agonizing decision because we know we need in-school learning, but safety is paramount. And we need to make sure that our kids and our educators and our communities are safe and that the safeguards are there and that they are funded. And it's been really, really excruciating to have to deal with a president who's in denial and a secretary of education who can't even articulate what a plan looks like for safe schools.
It's infuriating. And I'll tell you, I've never been so grateful that my kid is done with school before. I mean, because what's happening, I look on in disbelief every day. And, you know, I'm down here in Florida, yes, where we have a governor who, you know, likes to follow Donald Trump around with his tongue hanging out and is as completely inept as Trump is. And it shows with our numbers down here. So Randy Weingarten is president of the American Federation of Teachers. How do you talk to your membership? I mean, people rightly so have to be freaking out. And I've read, at least down here in South Florida, I know a lot of teachers are taking early retirement rather than going back into the classrooms where they could be putting their lives in harm.
Well, we're seeing far too many people retire early. We're seeing, we are seeing far too much recklessness on the part of Trump, yep, and Corcoran and DeSantis, as well as pressure behind the scenes to stop people from doing what is the responsible thing to do. I've heard about lots of pressure that they've put on, you know, school boards and other things, other entities, silencing, you know, like we saw in Palm Beach, silencing or trying to silence a health department official. Yeah. But at the end of the day, that's why in Florida, the FEA, the Florida Education Association, in conjunction with its two national unions and the NAACP, took the lawsuit to actually make safety first, not politics first. And DeSantis is just basically making politics first. It's a real disregard of the lives of kids and communities and teachers. And so I think that's why you're seeing Broward and Miami-Dade and others that are taking the step to, you know, get a waiver to start schools remotely, regardless of consequences. And even though one hopes that there will be some rationality there, because they know that in the middle of a surging pandemic of community spread, you can't reopen schools. You might have been able to reopen schools if DeSantis didn't scoff at what New York did and actually took some lessons from New York and reopened more slowly to make sure that there was less community spread. But what you have in Florida is huge community spread now, and denying it is not going to make it go away.
Right. And Trump got up on TV, I guess, today and said, Florida's doing great. No, we're not. That's the sad thing, is you would hope that even if he's inept, he'd at least be honest, but we can't even get that out of him. So we have to turn to our more immediate experts. So Randy Weingarten, I know the American Federation of Teachers just came out with a 16-page document. I'll post it on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com, where I post the show, Reopening School Buildings Safely. And it's a lot of common sense stuff. Even with all that in place, would you still recommend kids go back into the classroom? Or can...
It depends where you are, Nicole. In Florida... Look, there are lots of places, like in Miami Beach, mm-hmm, I would not recommend that kids go back to school. Let me start again. Kids are going to school.
Yes.
In August and September. The issue is whether they're going to school buildings or whether they're going to school remotely. Mm-hmm. And how do we make either of these things meaningful? And so in places like LA, Houston, Atlanta, Miami, these places where you have COVID spread that is as high as it is right now and not abating, kids cannot go back to a school building.
Right.
And what the doctors are telling us is that if they did, then you would actually even spike more community spread. Wow. And so when we're trying to get community spread down, not up, you can't do that. You can't reopen school buildings and have schools be super spreaders. Secondly, the effect of reopening schools where you have huge community spread is that kids and their families and teachers and their families will test positive and will, God forbid, get sick. So in a place of community spread, you have to look at things really differently. The other two issues are you have to have the set of guardrails, which we have now said again in our second report, but we've linked it to actual citations of where people are doing it, like what states and cities people are using these guardrails. You have to have the safety precautions and you have to fund it. And so if you have community spread, you can't reopen. If you don't have that kind of level of community spread, I'm not talking about 0%. I'm talking about you have community spread of like 5% and you have a transmission rate where one person is affecting more than one person. That means that outbreak becomes a surge. If you don't have community spread, then if you have the guardrails and you can fund them and you have a good closing procedure, including testing and tracing, and isolation, you can reopen in a hybrid manner. And the reason I say a hybrid manner, meaning some remote, some in person, because to reopen fully essentially means you're going to need 50% more teachers and you're going to need 50% more space. And most places in America don't have either of that or can't afford either of that.
Sure.
So that's why you've had people talking about so much this hybrid model.
Right. And yeah, I mean, there's so much. I mean, I guess if we had unlimited money for our schools, that it would make things a lot easier. But as it is, we have teachers digging into their own pockets to buy supplies. Schools are historically, horrifically underfunded. And the money it would take to make everything safe for social distancing and all that, it's just not there. Could be if everyone paid their fair share of taxes, but it's not there now.
If it was a priority, it could be.
Of course, it could be. Now, Randy Weingarten, I'd also be remiss if I didn't ask you about the other group of people that you represent, because I learned a few years back when I was at an AFT convention that American Federation of Teachers not only represents teachers, but you're one of the largest nurses unions in the country,
absolutely,
too. How are your nurses doing?
Look, people are scared again that we're, you know, the nurses are the ones and the doctors are the ones that are putting out the call for this COVID resurgence. And they're the ones who are like, why are you reopening too early? Why are you attempting? Why did you not learn the lessons of March and April? And so we're starting to see, you know, shortages again of PPE. We're starting to see shortages of emergency rooms, of intensive care units. And even though the good news is that there's less death, the doctors and the nurses are learning more about, you know, about what to do in terms of ventilators, what to do with, you know, what kind of steroids will work, what to do to try to deal with all the lung damage that COVID produces. They're starting to learn about the longer term implications. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing, even though we still have 157,000 people who have died, you're seeing less death because of what they have learned they are really, really concerned still about this pandemic and want us to make sure that things are handled safely. It's, you know, it's been interesting because our nurses with our educators have really urged that we be careful in terms of schooling and not to actually be reckless in terms of reopening too fast.
And it seems that that's where we are. And I'll tell you one other aspect that I really haven't heard much talk about, but as we get through this, if we get through it, if we come out on the other side, we're going to need immense mental health capabilities because, right, from teachers and nurses, the frontline heroes who have to go to work, to those of us who've been isolated at home for so many months. I mean, we're all going through something, and we're going to have a definite mental health need. And I hope somebody has that somewhere in their plans as we go forward. I say someone because not the Trump administration.
Teachers have had to do this already in terms of thinking through the start of this year and what kids will need. So, and what is lunacy is that teachers know more than anybody else that kids need in school learning.
Of course.
I mean, the reason we started planning so early, meaning in April, was because we didn't want to repeat what happened this year. And so then you see these states, because they handled it so poorly, and then they don't care about, you know, what happens to teachers or kids. It's reckless, irresponsible.
It's horrible.
It's the welfare of our kids is first and foremost on our minds, as is their safety and health.
Well, Randy, my thoughts are with you and all of those people you represent, the teachers and the nurses. I mean, what a constituency you have there. And these people need deserve our thanks and our help, however we can help them, and our blessings, because they're the ones that are doing it. They know what they need. And I'll trust them before I'll listen to the orange maniac in the White House pretending to be an expert. Randy Weingarten, thank you so much. Else we can do what we can do to help you and help your nurses and teachers?
Just, you know, we are not waiting for a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
We are not waiting to community spread gets to 0%. Everybody understands that we are in the middle of a pandemic, and this is about how we try to deal with the need of kids to see each other and be in school together, as well as making sure that things are healthy and safe. But we need to listen to the science and to the safety needs of our communities and our kids and our educators, and have the politicians actually listen to that instead of denying that that exists. The anger I have for a person like a DeSantis or a Trump or a DeVos who completely disregards the health and safety needs of our communities and of our kids and is willing to jeopardize them, it's just unconscionable. It's unconscionable.
I agree 100%. Well, I'm glad you're on the case. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. Find them at aft.org. Find Randy on the Twitters, @RyanWeingarten. And thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Nicole.
All right.
Thanks for everything.
Take good care. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Randy Weingarten. I have so much. My sister is a teacher. She's a special ed specialist, I think it's called. And, you know, she's like, I still don't know. If they tell me I have to go back, I guess I'll go back. Because she's too young to retire. I mean, what are you supposed to do? That is the question. All right. It is Tuesday. Gotta Laugh is standing by. I'll tell you what we'll do is take a very quick time out, and we'll be back with Gotta Laugh on the Nicole Sandler Show and the Progressive Voices Network. Okay. Tell you what, while Progressive Voices in a break, we'll listen to Jim Hightower real quickly, and we'll be back real quickly. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Socialism, snarled the Donald at a recent pep rally of far-right Republicans. And the obedient crowd of Trumpistas snarled back in unison, Socialism! There you have the entire intellectual content of the GOP's 2020 re-election strategy under Generalissimo Trump. Slap Democrats with a scurrilous campaign, branding them as Lenin-Trotsky-Stalin reincarnate. It's not just Trump hissing out the socialist label in a frantic McCarthy-esque attempt to make it stick by mindless repetition, but also Republican lawmakers. Unfortunately for them, they're overplaying a weak hand and bumbling over their own ignorance. Texas Senator John Cornyn, for example, compared Democrats who support ideas like Medicare for All to Mussolini. Apparently, Cornyn is unaware that the brutish Italian dictator was no socialist but a fascist. Mussolini's ideology of ultranationalism, masculine authoritarianism, suppression of democratic rights, and rule by wealthy elites is the opposite of the democratic agenda. Indeed, it describes the policies of, guess who, Trump and his acolytes, including Cornyn. The real problem for the GOP, however, is not merely that squawking socialism makes them sound like nutty old fuddy-duddies, but that the democratic policies they're attacking are enormously popular with America's workaday majority. Government-backed health care for all? Sure. Why should CEOs and Congress creditors be the only ones to get this? Affordable higher education? Of course, for that helps all of America. A wealth tax on corporate giants and the super-rich? Long overdue. Restore the rights of labor and restrain the rise of monopolies? Yes. This is Jim Hightower saying, far from socialism, this is democratic populism, an honest popular rebellion against the corporate plutocracy promoted by Trump and Cornyn. Which side are you on?
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network and NicoleSandler.com.
Here's the perfect place to go. It's Tuesdays with Gotta Laugh on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, every Tuesday, Gotta Laugh joins us here on the Nicole Sandler Show. But wait a minute. I gotta first get Laffy on the line when we're gonna talk. So because I just see a picture of her here on the screen. But anyway, we'll push the buttons and say hello.
November election hotline.
Oh, say that again, because I didn't have your pot up when I first started hearing from you.
And I don't see you. I see Randy.
you'll see me in a second.
Oh, okay. Yes, you've reached the November election hotline.
Okay.
Yeah. Press 1 if you think Trump will get people to stop voting by mail by forcing them to use only stamps with his face on them.
Oh, God.
Press 2 if you think they'll get Trump out of the White House by leaving a trail of Big Macs leading straight to a Secret Service van. Press 3 if you think when Trump loses, he'll have more time to spend with his family, which is exactly why he's doing everything he can to win.
Absolutely. Oh, my.
Have a nice day.
Goodness. Ay, ay, ay.
I almost okay. I still can't see you, by the way.
And there you are. Yay. No, I got you back. Okay. Hopefully. Can you see me now?
No, I see a frozen Randy.
Oh, I know why. Okay, because what happened was when I started streaming and we had no sound going to Facebook, what I realized was it was the software that I used to stream video. It's something called Wirecast. Mm-hmm. And there was just something that got foobarred in it. So I had to stop it. And because when all else fails, you reboot. And so I rebooted it and the audio was fine. Doesn't it figure?
Good.
But so anyway, that threw everything off. That's why we're not on Facebook, because I couldn't get it going on Facebook again. But we are still streaming video on Periscope, and I'm still suspended from YouTube, which really pisses me off. So
I still don't see you, by the way.
You still don't see me?
No, why would I see you? I see Randy.
Wow, that's weird.
Hi, Randy.
Hold on. I know how we can do this. Okay.
Ah, there
now
we are.
You see me. Oh, I got all my little trickies here. So
I get
Laffy.
To see your face. Yes.
Ay, ay, ay,
yes.
Ay, just
yes,
wow.
I understand. I feel the same way. Okay. You know what? Because you know that I want to read something that's kind of long.
Yep.
So do you want to go right to Tweeties?
We can. All right. So somebody let loose the birdies.
Welcome to my tweet.
Okay, let's tweet.
Okay, so this came, it was actually tweeted out too, but I'm reading this directly from the website of an MSNBC producer named Ariana Picari, who worked apparently on the Lawrence O'Donnell show.
Okay.
Yep. And it's titled, and I'm going to read this to you guys. It's kind of long, so bear with me.
All right.
It says, "Personal News, Why I'm Now Leaving MSNBC."
Okay.
Let's see. Here we go. Quote, "Just quit. That's the advice Alec gave a year and a half ago when I expressed concerns about my job. Quote, you just quit. It's that simple. Stay at MSNBC, at least until the midterms, Jeffrey said a couple of years back. He advised to watch and see what happens. Oops, sorry. Hang in there. You're needed, Elizabeth recommended last winter. I was in your shoes when I was younger, but I stuck it out. A year and a half ago, simply quitting my job without knowing my next step sounded pretty radical.
Mm-hmm.
So I stuck it out a bit longer until we were in the middle of a pandemic to make a truly radical move.
Oy.
July 24th was my last day at MSNBC. I don't know what I'm going to do next exactly, but I simply couldn't stay there anymore. My colleagues are very smart people with good intentions. The problem is the job itself. It forces skilled journalists to make bad decisions on a daily basis. I say this, by the way, I'm reading this as somebody who watches MSNBC, and despite all its issues, I still watch MSNBC and enjoy a lot of it.
Yeah.
But it's, this is something you all pretty much, you know, suspected, but her wording and her insights are interesting. Where am I? Okay. You may not watch MSNBC, but just know that this problem still affects you too. All the commercial networks function the same. And no doubt that content seeps into your social media feed one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that I'm more sensitive to the editorial process due to my background in public radio, where no decision I ever witnessed was predicated on how a topic or guest would rate, and that's in quotes.
Huh.
The longer I was at MSNBC, the more I saw such choices. It's practically baked into the editorial process, and those decisions affect news content every day. Likewise, it's taboo to discuss how the rating scheme distorts content, or it's simply taken for granted because everyone in the commercial broadcast news industry is doing the exact same thing. But behind closed doors, industry leaders will admit the damage that's been done. Quote, we are a cancer and there is no cure, a successful and insightful TV veteran said to me. But if you could find a cure, it would change the world. As it is, this cancer stokes national division, even in the middle of a civil rights crisis. The model blocks diversity of thought and content because the networks have incentive to amplify fringe voices and events at the expense of others, all because it pumps up the ratings. See, this is stuff we knew, but it's interesting hearing how she goes, you know, into it here. This cancer risks human lives, even in the middle of a pandemic. The primary focus quickly became what Donald Trump was doing, and then parenthetically, poorly, to address the crisis rather than the science itself. Think about that for a second. That's important. As new details have become available about antibodies, a vaccine, or how COVID actually spreads, producers still want to focus on the politics. Important facts or studies get buried. This cancer risks our democracy, even in the middle of a presidential election. Any discussion about the election usually focuses on Donald Trump, not Joe Biden, a repeat offense from 2016.
Right.
Trump smothers out all other coverage. Also important is to ensure citizens can vote by mail this year, but I've watched that topic get ignored or killed numerous times. Now, I gotta jump in there because I watch MSNBC all the time. They talk about vote by mail all day long.
Yes,
so I don't know where, maybe early on they didn't. Maybe she was worried about this early on. Context and factual data are often considered too cumbersome for the audience. There may be some truth to that. Our education system really should improve the critical thinking skills of Americans. But another hard truth is that it is the job of journalists to teach and inform, which means they might need to figure out a better way to do that. they could contemplate more creative methods for captivating an audience. Just about anything would improve the current process, which can be pretty rudimentary. Basing today's content on whatever rated well yesterday, or look to see what's trending online today. Occasionally, the producers will choose to do a topic or story without regard for how they think it will rate, but that is the exception, not the rule. Due to the simple structure of the industry, the desire to charge more money for commercials, as well as the ratings bonuses that top-tier decision makers earn, they always relapse into their old profitable programming habits. I understand that the journalistic process is largely subjective, and any group of individuals may justify a different set of priorities on any given day. Therefore, it's particularly notable to me, for one, that nearly every rundown at the network basically is the same hour after hour. I think we've all noticed that, right, Nicole?
Yeah.
And two, they use the subjective nature of the news to justify economically beneficial decisions.
Yep.
I've even heard producers deny their role as journalists. A very capable senior producer once said, quote, "Our viewers don't really consider us the news. They come to us for comfort." Again, personally, I don't think the people need to change. I think the job itself needs to change. There's a better way to do this. I'm not so cynical to think that we are absolutely doomed, though we are on that path. I know we can find a cure. If we can figure out how to send a man to the moon, if Alex Trebek can defy the odds with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and if Harry Reid can actually overcome pancreatic cancer, he's now cancer-free, then we can fix this too. Not everything, a quote, "not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced." I know James Baldwin wasn't thinking about MSNBC when he wrote that line in 1962, but those words spoke loudly to me in the summer of 2020. Unfortunately, many of the same ailments are still at stake today. Now maybe we can't really change the inherently broken structure of broadcast news, but I know for certain that it won't change unless we actually face it in public and at least try to change it. Though this pandemic and the surreal alienating lockdown, I've witnessed many people question their lives and what they're doing with their time on this planet.
You know what? We get the gist. I mean, it goes on and on. So this is a producer from Lawrence O'Donnell's show who quit.
Right. This was at the end. And at the end, she also says she's going to be starting a new life in Virginia. She's moving back to Virginia with her family to be with her family. And she's going to be soon. This is an important little ending. "I'm going to be seeking you out. Any one of you who also may sense that the news is fundamentally flawed and is frustrated by it. This effort will start informally, but I hope to crystallize a plan for when better, safer days are upon us. On that front, reach out to me." And she followed up today saying that Fox misrepresented this whole thing that she's saying. And again, reach out to her as soon as possible.
Well, you know, I have mixed feelings about what she said. Look, she's a producer, which means, and on a show like Lawrence O'Donnell's, it does mean that you need to be on top of the news, but they're a business and they're in the business of selling advertising. And the money, the rates for the advertising are determined by the ratings. The fact that she's saying she works in commercial broadcasting and is pissed off because it's ratings that dictate her job. What else is new? Why did she get into this business in the first place? Look, I get it. She should have stayed in public radio because they don't worry about ratings, because ostensibly they don't worry about ad sales, though go listen to an NPR station or watch PBS and watch the underwriting announcements.
Yeah.
Those are commercials. There's no other way to describe them, but they're not as beholden to the ratings. That's how it works. I don't understand why she's surprised or so outraged. I get it. I wish it weren't that way. I'm counting the days, frankly, and I don't know when he hits the air, but I can't wait till Shepard Smith starts his 7 p.m. Eastern newscast on CNBC, because I'll watch that. I don't watch Joy Reid. These days, if the TV's on, I have it on CNN at 7 p.m. And I'll watch Shepard Smith because he has promised us he is going to do a straight news show. No pundits, no opinions, just report the news.
That's refreshing.
Yes.
Well, I get the feeling from reading it she had high expectations and that she thought maybe she could be the one to make a difference and that maybe she didn't expect it to be quite as bad as as we all know it is. I mean, she sounds naive a little bit.
Yes.
Or maybe not, maybe just hopeful.
Yeah.
But it was just an interesting take. And it is
making
the rounds.
And frankly, I'm glad that I didn't hear, you know, there's a culture of sexism or racism or, you know, I thought it was going to be something along those lines or slave drivers and you don't have a life and they expect you. It wasn't any of those things. It was like they expect you to be guided by ratings. Well, what else is new?
Exactly. I'm not quite sure what she would have expected. I wish she had gone into that, but that's something you could reach out and ask her. Maybe you could get her on the show.
Okay. With my background, I send me her information. I'll talk to her, but I honestly think she's way off base here. And there's
Twitter.
A million people waiting to take over her job.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. I totally get, you know, it's all the idealism that we have and wish that news could be.
Yeah.
But she took the job and she was getting paid.
And I'm sure she was getting paid fairly handsomely. I mean, I'm sure they don't pay their producers a fortune, but I'm sure they make a decent living.
A good living. Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, on to tweets.
Okay.
Breaking. Oh, yeah. Okay. This Manhattan District Attorney's, I'm sure everyone heard this by now, but the Manhattan District Attorney's Office suggested that it has been investigating Trump and his company for possible bank and insurance fraud, a significantly broader inquiry than the prosecutors have acknowledged in the past.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Cyrus Vance.
Yeah.
So,
Cyrus
and this
Vance.
Is somebody, you know, there are no pardons involved here. This is something that wouldn't.
No. And they're talking about this, you know, that one of the arguments that Trump's lawyers put up for the third time trying to block this information, which the Supreme Court already cleared the way to be given to them,
right.
Was that it's wildly overbroad. Well, no. And the prosecutors are saying the subpoena was not too broad since that notion is based on the false premise that the inquiry is limited to those hush money payments made by Michael Cohen. But the documents mention public reports of possibly extensive and protracted criminal conduct at the Trump Organization. This goes way deeper than that.
This goes back to that 2018 New York Times gigantic article about how he used to pad his income for
that, and all those papers
loans.
Came from Mary Trump.
Yep. Yep, that's right. So there's it's like so many things are overlapping now, and he can't do. And also the judge who would rule on Trump's complaint about this, trying to stop it, is the same judge that already gave them the okay the first time.
Right.
So that's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, they're just what they're doing is stalling, and they're trying to run out the clock so none of this stuff comes out before the election.
True.
And it's up to Cy Vance and the judges to move things along really quickly because they can.
Well, Cy Vance is trying to.
Oh, I know.
The judge has to now. Yep. Okay, here's something that cheered my day a little bit.
Yeah.
The SEC is probing the circumstances around Eastman Kodak's announcement of a $765 million government loan to make pharmaceutical products at its factories, which they never did before. So
Eastman Kodak, they used to make film. Film was something that would go
and
in
cameras.
Something called a camera that was separate from your phone. And you would put the film in the camera. You would press a shutter. You would advance the film. Once the film cartridge was done, you would take it somewhere to get the film developed. And they would give you these prints of photos. It was a unique thing.
My dad used to have a dark room and I'd spend all my time in there with him and watch him pour the chemicals in.
Oh.
And Eastman Kodak had those chemicals, which is why Trump thought,
they
got
know chemicals.
Oh, my God. I bet they could make hydroxychloroquine, which, by the way, is part of the deal that they would produce hydroxychloroquine.
Of course it is. Oh, my God.
This is ridiculous.
This is just I want to see an investigation into this bit of genius.
Oh, it's going to happen.
Yep.
Everyone on TV who has been talking about this, who knows anything about this, has said it ain't going away. This is going to be looked into.
Good.
This is upsetting.
Yeah.
The Census Bureau is ending all counting efforts on September 30th, a month shorter than previously announced, the Bureau's director confirmed. That includes critical door-knocking efforts and collecting responses online over the phone and by mail.
Yep.
The last-minute changes to the constitutionally mandated count of every person living in the U.S. threaten the accuracy of population numbers used to determine the distribution of political representation and federal funding for the next decade.
Yes, and they're saying now about 40% of households have not yet been counted.
They haven't been counted, and it says now has less than 2 months to try to reach people of color, immigrants, renters, rural residents, and other members of historically undercounted groups not likely to fill out a census form on their own. Democrats in Congress and many census advocates have become increasingly concerned that the White House is pressuring the Bureau to stop counting soon, guess why, in order to benefit Republicans when House seats are reapportioned and voting districts are drawn.
Of course, because they know that the writing is on the wall. They know that if the votes are counted fairly, that Donald Trump is going to get his ass kicked. And so they're trying to hold on to whatever advantages they can glom onto before they're all booted out of office.
Right. Right. Which is what they want to do.
Yep.
Daniel Dale. Okay. So the Jonathan Swan interview, which was insane.
Yes.
I haven't watched all of it. I have it on YouTube that I'm going to watch after the show, but Declipped. Oh, you saw the whole thing?
Oh, I saw the whole thing. I watched it this morning with my jaw, you know, hanging open.
Well, we could talk all day about the answers he gave.
Right.
And I have, I think, one or two tweets about that. But this is a good observation by Daniel Dale that, of course, is really obvious and you'll agree with. The excellent Jonathan Swan interview is yet more evidence that even basic follow-up questioning, like asking, wait, hold on, what are you even talking about, immediately exposes Trump's lies, and yet it has almost never happened.
Right. So, for instance, like I've got this one clip real quick. I'm not going to play a whole lot of it, but here we go. This.
The testing. We have tested more people than any other country, than all of Europe put together times two. We have tested more people than anybody ever thought of. India has 1.4 billion people. They've done 11 million tests. We've done 55. It'll be close to 60 million tests.
Okay, Jonathan, your turn
now. You know, there are those that say, you can test too much. You do know that.
Who says that?
Who says that?
Just read the manuals. Read the books.
Read the manuals.
Read the
manuals.
Read the books.
What books?
What testing does? Wait a minute. Let me explain. What testing does? It shows cases. It shows where there may be cases.
And of course,
other countries test.
Of course, he doesn't explain. He goes on to not answer the question. But you know, I'm always yelling back. Who says? What books? And he said the same things that I'm screaming at the TV. So that was good. All right.
Yes.
Now,
okay,
I've got one more, and I've got the video.
Do you have the one that I like?
I have the one that you like, and I pulled the video of it. So you can see Donald Trump, if you're watching on the Periscope video, you can see Donald Trump, you know, he likes props. He likes charts because that's all he knows. You know, things
And he also likes stacks of empty paper.
Right. But, paper and you know, colors and lines and blocks and things like that. So this is about, well, here, we'll just let it play out for you because it speaks for itself.
Look at some of these charts.
I'd love to.
We're going to look.
Let's look.
If you look at death.
Yeah. There's no sound, right?
Started to go up again.
One. Well, right here, the United States is lowest in numerous categories. We're lower than the world.
Lower than
we're
the
lower
world?
Lower than
what is that?
Europe.
In what?
Look.
In what?
Take a look.
We're lower than Europe. In what?
Right here.
I can't hear it.
Okay, but I'll tell you what's going on. Sorry.
Oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population. That's where the U.S. is really bad.
Well,
much worse than South Korea, Germany, etc.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. So that was the part. Sorry, I realize I'm playing this on the same audio pot that you come up through. That's why you couldn't hear it. So he's like, he says, death as a portion of the number of tests we're doing. And he's like, well, no, you need to look at death in relation to the population.
Yes.
And Trump's like, oh, you can't do that. But that's how you do it.
Did you happen to get the part where he goes, we're last? The quote from Trump.
Okay, you know what? Let me just play the audio. Forget the video. This way you'll be able to hear it. Here we go.
Okay.
Or not, because it doesn't want to play.
The quote that I want, and if you can get it, Trump, they're talking about deaths, and Trump goes, "We're last, meaning we're first. We're the best."
Oh, yes. Last meaning the first. Yeah. Hold on. Wait a second. I may be able to get it
opposite
here.
World.
Here we go. Yes. No, maybe. Damn it. Hold on. Let me pull it over here and see if this does the trick. You know, I went through like a week with no technical problems, so there was bound to happen. All right. Let me try it this way. No. I have one more. No, and you won't even see.
Here
we go.
We're going to look.
Here we go. We're going to look.
Look at death.
Yeah. Started to go up again.
Here's one.
Well, right here, the United States is lowest in numerous categories. We're lower than the world.
Lower than the world.
Lower than Europe.
What?
In what?
In what? In what?
Take a look.
Take a look. Because I don't know. You look.
Here's case death.
Case death.
Oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population. That's where the U.S. is really bad.
Well,
much worse than South Korea, Germany, etc.
You can't do that. Look, here is the United States. You have to go by the cases. The cases.
Why not as a proportion of population?
When we have somebody, what it says is when you have somebody that has it, where there's a case.
Oh, okay.
The people that live from those cases.
It's surely a relevant statistic to say if the U.S. has X population and X percentage of death of that population versus South Korea.
No, you have to go by the cases.
Well, look at South Korea, for example. 51 million population, 300 deaths. It's like, it's crazy.
You don't know that.
You think they're faking their statistics? South Korea?
I won't get into that because they have a very good relationship with the country. But you don't know that. And they have spikes. Look, here's
Germany,
one.
Low, 9,000.
Here's one right here, United States. You take the number of cases. Okay. Now look, we're last.
No, look, we're last.
Meaning we're first.
Last,
meaning
I don't we're know first.
What
is a what?
Take a look. Again, it's cases.
Okay.
We're last.
We have
meaning
cases
we're first.
Because of the testing.
Wait. 1,000 Americans die a day, but I understand. I understand on cases, it's different.
No, but you're not reporting it correctly, Jonathan.
I think I am. But
if you take a look at this other chart, look, this is our testing, I believe. This is the testing, yeah.
Yeah, we do more tests.
No, wait a minute. Well, don't we get credit for that? And because we do more tests,
you
we
get
have more
extra
cases.
Credit
in other
for
words,
that.
We test more. We have. Now, take a look.
Okay. Yes, Donnie, you get extra credit. You get a gold star. Don't we get credit for that? What the fuck? The man is an imbecile. He is just a fucking imbecile.
Stupid. God, he's just unbelievable. Did you just play this part? Because it ran by fast.
Which part?
Trump says, when I took over, we didn't even have a test. And Swan goes, why would you have a test? The virus
didn't exist. I think it got cut off at that point. Right. I could have kept going. I mean, the thing goes for like 30 minutes or something. And it's
who's on
one
first
thing after another. Oh, my God. The man is a fucking certifiable moron.
He's horrible. I mean, just awful. You know, when you after watching Chris Wallace, you think, oh well, you know, he'll never do another interview, and if he does, he'll keep his mouth shut a little bit. No, this was like, let's just stomp all over myself. Let's just be as stupid as I possibly can be. Do you think he'll ever let Swan interview him again?
Oh God, no, of course not. No, but you know, look, if all goes well, the man's only got 3 months, well, and then two left in office. So wow,
true.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Uh-huh.
All right. So here's an I told you so.
Okay.
This one's from the New York Times. When COVID subsided, Israel reopened its schools.
Yep.
It didn't go well.
Nope.
Within days, infections were reported at a Jerusalem high school, which quickly mushroomed into the largest outbreak in a single school in Israel, possibly the world.
Wow.
And we're opening our schools. What is wrong? Okay, did they not learn from opening bars? Did they not
they
learn
learned
from opening
nothing
salons?
They learn nothing, because what Donald Trump does is saying, nah, 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 I can't hear you. Nah, 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 nah.
Hydroxychloroquine. But it's not. It's up to the governors. Why?
Yes.
So they're going to sit
well,
there and say,
well, and it
Trump
depends
said
on the governor. So if you're like me, you got an idiot like Ron death sentence, and
he's
we're
so
fucked.
So, speaking of whom?
Yeah.
Five people who. This is from the Hill.
I know
five
what you're going to say.
who attended meetings, a meeting with DeSantis in
death
Florida,
sentence
test positive.
It's death sentence. It's not DeSantis. It's
death sentence. Yes.
Sorry.
For those who don't know, though, on who are listening, it's DeSantis. Same idea. Yes. Yeah. Five people who attended a meeting with him in Florida test positive for the coronavirus.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I'm waiting because if karma is real, in the next few days, we should see Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump, Bill Barr all come down with the Rona because they've all been exposed to it by now.
Yeah, you would think after, what's his name?
Louis Gohmert.
Yeah, you'd think after that a few people would be sick. But I mean, poor Raul Grijalva.
Yep.
That made me upset because I worked with him. I did some videos for him and nice man.
He's a very nice man.
That.
He was a very nice man. And he was, look, he's like, he's totally blaming Louis Gohmert, Goober Gohmert.
Yeah, he is. He should.
Yep. He absolutely should.
And plus, they wouldn't let him into that. Was it a hearing or a meeting? They wouldn't let him. Sorry. They wouldn't let him do it on video. They insisted he come in person or they wouldn't let him attend way.
Wow.
That's why he went.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And I don't know if he's showing any symptoms yet or not, as I don't know about Gohmert either. I don't know.
He did an interview, video interview. And there was an audio interview yet last night and he sounded like he was good. And he's hoping he doesn't get anything, you know, like he's feeling fine, basically.
Come on. But, if there's a God.
come on. Let's get real here.
If karma is a thing.
Yeah. If karma is a thing. So John Russell, who is, I'll tell you in a momento, Courthouse News.
Okay.
He reports for Courthouse News. He said Neil Young is suing the Trump campaign at SDNY.
Uh-huh.
It says here, Neil Young, quote, in good conscience cannot allow his music to be used as a theme song for a divisive un-American campaign of ignorance and hate. That's in the court papers.
Who say that again?
Neil Young,
yes.
Quote,
yes.
In good conscience cannot allow his music to be used as a theme song
for
a divisive un-American campaign of ignorance and hate.
You know what? Good for him. Because here's the deal. If you purchase as a campaign the license, and it's all about music publishing, it's what got me banned and thrown off of YouTube, fuck you, Universal Music Publishing Group. It's all about publishing and and usage. And if they paid the licenses to be able to play that music during their rallies, then there's really nothing Neil Young can do about it. What he's doing is pushing money at it and making a point. Legally, he doesn't have a case, but morally, he should. Because he should be able to say, I don't want that piece of shit using my music to promote his evilness, if that makes sense.
It do. And my last one of the day, my last little tweety, it's from our pal, LOLGOP.
Uh-huh.
First, he quotes a tweet from Michigan Campaign Finance Network, and that says, Scoop. The leading effort to recall Governor Gretchen Whitmer has withdrawn its ballot language amid allegations its founder used committee money for personal use. Okay. So LOLGOP says, if the founder reveals he got COVID-19 while not wearing a mask, this will be the most Republican thing that's ever happened. We love LOLGOP.
Yes, we do. And he does write regularly on the opinion page of USA Today under his real name. But it does say he tweets under LOLGOP. So because I'm forgetting his real name, too. So
I almost had it. Because Sattler.
Jason Sattler.
Yeah.
There you go. Sometimes all I need is just that little push, you know, the little push.
Well, the only reason I remembered it is because I grew up with a kid named Mark Sattler, and so the name stuck, but I never remember his first name.
So let me tell you, tomorrow on the program, I have Ken Klapperstein from The Nation.
Oh, he's good.
He's good. And he's been writing about the, you know, Trump's Gestapo, Trump's secret police that went into Portland and all this. And I booked him. Actually asked on Friday if he could do the show on Wednesday, because I do the music thing on Monday. I have you Tuesday. So I booked him for Wednesday. Well, yesterday he broke this big story about these same secret police keeping, doing intel on protesters, on leftist agitators, on trying to link Antifa to foreign governments. How funny is that? And one of the people caught up in their intel is supposedly a liberal podcaster. So this is a big news story. So Ken Klippenstein will be on with me tomorrow. And then on Friday, just so you know, I'm so excited about this. The Midas Touch, there are three brothers who are making these great videos, and they're going to join us to shine a spotlight on them, because these are Democrats as opposed to like the Lincoln Project, who also does good work. But, you know, they're Republicans. These guys, they're brothers. They're awesome. They're and they're adorable. Yeah. So that'll be Friday. So we got a big show, a week of shows ahead of us, and Howie Klein on Thursday.
Sounds good.
Gotta go. I'm late. See you later. Gotta laugh and see you tomorrow. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye.